When Andre sold his car on finance with Motorway, he got more money. Ooh! He then put that extra money into tickets to follow his team around the country.
Come on, Rex!
Selling on Motorway was completely stress-free, which is more than I can say about being a supporter of Rex!
Sell your car the more money way. Where 84% of sellers sold for more. Motorway. Validated against two independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Clazo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. We've got a new top 100 draft update on the site this week. That's what we're gonna talk about today on the show. But Peter, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I'm actually fired up about all the great Major League Baseball that's going on. There's I'm mostly just keyed in on the race for the third wild card spot, like in the AL. You've got the Twins, Tigers, I guess the Mariners to a little bit of a lesser extent battling it out. And then the Braves and the Diamondbacks and the NL, all the divisional races are kind of wrapped up, but I'm pretty fascinated by the wild card races. So that combined with the getting into the heat of fall, I guess I'm in a rather good mood on this gloomy Thursday in Boston.
Yeah, it's good. Now we've got, I think, Yankees and Brewers are the two teams who have officially clinched as of this recording. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we're kind of pivoting into postseason baseball, at least postseason race to get into the postseason. I know for me personally, after submitting this top 100 update for the draft this week on the site, after that's done, I can kind of switch into prospect handbook mode. So a lot of pro stuff on the mind. For me moving forward, I've got Guardians and Braves in the handbook this year. You have the Padres. I know we're both going to be doing some work on that in the coming weeks. You've also done some transfer portal, some newcomers rankings work for the magazine and for the website. So we've got more of that on the way. But yeah, today I figured we could just kind of have a conversation about the top 100 update that went out. It is basically an update that tries to fold in a lot of the summer feedback, summer performance from the class at large. There are obviously Team USA, the college national team, the 18U national team, the Cape Cod League, all the various college summer leagues. You've got the entire showcase circuit that, for the most part, all the big summer events are kind of wrapped as we're talking now. There are still some big events in the fall, including Jupiter, that myself, you, Ben, are all going to be at. So I'm really looking forward to that event. But this is kind of the first touch point of the class after the industry has had a chance to really focus on 25s exclusively. Entering the summer, we do have a list that is kind of our starting point for the class that you and Ben have done a lot of good work on the underclass and the college and high school sides respectively. But at that point, there have been a lot of overlapping events, at least for the scouting industry, in terms of the feedback we're getting. The group really hasn't focused on the class at that stage. And now we're getting at the point where you're starting to have more in-depth conversations with scouts about the specific players. You're starting to get a feel for where the tiers might be in the class. But I would say we're still very early in the draft cycle, and just the asymmetries between different organizations, different scouts that you talk to, different looks of players. Like, there's still a lot of ranging and diverging opinions on these players. And so I definitely wouldn't like look at this list now and be like highly convinced or convicted in like a specific area. But I do think it's a good starting point in terms of tiering players and kind of getting a feel for the class as a whole. So I guess, Peter, to start, I want to talk about 1-1 at some point, but I think it makes more sense to maybe have a more like macro look. What do you think about the class as it stands today, like as a whole? Are you excited about this class? Do you think it is an improvement from last year? Do you have any specific question marks or concerns about certain demographics? Are there certain areas that you're really enthused with at this point? Just what are your overall feelings of this year's class?
We touched on it, I think, last week especially, but it could be just the general excitement of turning over the page from 24 to 25, but I'm really excited about this group. I think it lacks in maybe the star power at the top that we had last year when we kind of had this ongoing debate of Charlie Condon versus Travis Bezzano versus JJ Weatherholt versus others at 1-1 jockeying for that spot, really the entirety of the cycle. This year, there'll be other names jockeying for 1-1, which we'll get into, but it does feel like we don't have a Bazzana type, which I don't think necessarily is a knock on the class. I think it's just one of the differences. But as a whole, and this was due in large part, I think, to being on the Cape and the talent this summer, I thought, especially pre-draft, pre-USA, sort of that June, third week in June to the 4th of July, I thought the talent was really impressive. And I got to look at a lot. And I think in what was different than in years past is a lot of the USA guys actually came to the Cape before and or after going, which helps a ton when you're looking at the overall talent of the league. So guys like Caden Bodine, Ike Irish, they were both up there. Neither Bremner nor Arnold were, but that was not surprising at all, just given their workload at school. If they were going to throw it all, it was going to be down at Cary. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. And I think I'm also I'm excited about it on the prep side as well. I think there's a lot of high-end talent. I think that, you know, Ethan Holiday is kind of the face of the class, I guess you could say, and for good reason. But as we'll get into, you know, players like Xavier Nyans, Cruz Schoolcraft, Billy Carlson, I don't think they're too far off. So I'd say, just given how early it is, I'm really fired up about this group, and there are a lot of players I know well and excited to sink my teeth into more of them. And it'll be fun to see how this list and everything shuffles itself out over the course of the next handful of months.
Yeah, I think that's a good breakdown. I mean, a lot of the scouts I've talked to recently, it does seem like at this stage, the feel for the high school players seems to be a little bit more advanced than the college players specifically. Just you have so many high school events lined up where you can really get a bulk of the class in one go. That's kind of how I also view it too. Like I feel like I get a better read on the high school players initially, and then I kind of play catch up personally with the college players each year, just because I'm focused on them more in terms of my in-person looks. But I have heard some feedback from some scouts who are really excited about this high school class overall, particularly the players on the West Coast. We had kind of a supplemental piece that went out with the top 100 update, breaking down some of the major just kind of themes we're hearing about. And the West Coast talent of this prep class is just extremely impressive, both in terms of top end talent and depth of class overall. I think your point about kind of the star power at the top of the college class is a really good one, because right now I would say that that group last year is more exciting to me than this year's current group. But I also think that it's probably pretty natural for that to be the case at this stage. And a lot of players are going to take steps forward next year. And so I'm really curious to see, like, who are the Charlie Condons that are going to move from, like, kind of considered near this top tier, but certainly not the tier of prospect that he was at the end of the process. Who's going to be the guy that takes a big step forward like that? Even pitchers like Kagan Smith and Chase Burns, I mean, we talk about them in a really positive light at the end of the day because their springs were so dominant. But I remember, or I just had a conversation with a scout the other day talking about how this year's college pitching class at the very top was actually really impressive. Just the fact that you have so much conviction in both Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold as top of the class starter profiles. We really didn't have a lot of that last year at this stage. There was a lot of reliever risk in that demographic specifically. Both Chase Burns and Hagen Smith, I think they were at like 15 or 16 on the board on our February 1st top 200 preseason list. And then they obviously moved pretty quickly up the board and kind of established themselves as the premier arms in the class. I think we had Josh Hartle right there in that same group, and he trended in the opposite direction. But I think this class just offers a really good balance across the demographics at this point. I would like a little bit more college infield talent, I think. And maybe guys like Ava Arquette or Wahia Aloy will take steps forward in that regard to just make me a little more excited about the middle infielders at the college level. But you got a lot of really good college hitters in the outfield demographic that I feel like are exciting, led by obviously Jace Laviolette and Cam Cannarella. But there is this like sort of second tier of college outfielders, the Nick Dumanel, Nolan Schubart, Ethan Petrie, Brendan Summerhall, Summerhill, excuse me, sorry to butcher your name, Brennan Compton, Ethan Conrad. Like there's just a lot of depth. I didn't even mention Gavin Turley. And if these players come out and have strong springs, I feel like you could be looking at a first round picture that has college bats. You've got some up the middle profiles. You've got college catchers. You've got starting profiles in Bremner and Arnold. And I'm assuming there are going to be others, like maybe one of your favorites, Kyson Witherspoon, takes a step forward. If Cam Leiter is healthy, I think he could immediately jump into that group. Then you look at the high school class. You've got tons of up the middle high school profiles, even if you don't consider Ethan Holiday and Xavier Nyans as up the middle profiles, which I wouldn't. You've got guys like Kasen Cunningham, Eli Willits, Brady Ebel, Coy James. You've got an interesting crop of high school pitchers led by Seth Hernandez, who is probably better than any high school pitcher in last year's class at any point now. And then you have just a depth of high school players throughout the 100. I mean, this update was impressive to me because there were so many guys that I really wanted to squeeze in, really going down to like 115, 120 on my kind of list right now. There are a lot of guys that I think could have easily fit in the top 100 and been really defensible. So I feel like this class has a lot of potential depending on what happens next year. Right now, I would put it as at least like a solid average class overall. And if you're giving extra points towards depth, I could even see an argument for a 55 grade for the class now. But I just think it's a really well-rounded group.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way, especially on the initial grade. And up at the top with Bremner and Arnold, I see very, very minimal reliever risk between the two of them. And the debate for SP1 is going to be a really fascinating one as we go further along here. I think that those two are leading. They're leaders in the clubhouse right now. But like you said, Cam Leiter, assuming health and a little bit more of a step forward in the pitchability department, he's going to vault himself right into that conversation. I know I've long been a Kyson Witherspoon guy, and I think that he's right there as well. I'm interested to see how Gabe Davis looks at Oklahoma State and what role he's in. He's another premium arm talent. And then I'm kind of honed in on down here in sort of the late first round to comp round type of range. There's a group four guys that I think could really vault themselves higher, and it's Brandon Compton, Brendan Summerhill, Murph Gray, and Ethan Conrad. And I know that we've talked about Brandon Compton a bunch, whether it be his strong performance on the Cape. He had a really good year at Arizona State, kind of made himself, I think, a lot of money this summer and into more of a household name. And I think that when all is said and done in the draft cycle, and Devin Taylor is a really, really good player, but I think that as we go along here, I think people are going to kind of realize that there isn't a huge difference between Devin Taylor and Brandon Compton, at least from what I saw this summer. The impact that Compton's able to generate is maybe a little bit more impressive. The approach, I think, for Compton, if he can continue to show the mature approach that he showed and the advanced pitch recognition skills and the lack of expanding the strike zone, if he can continue to show that in the spring, that's going to vault him way higher. I think just having that not be an anomaly of this summer is key. But like, I saw at least an average hit tool teetering on above average. And in left, again, it's hard to get juiced up about left field defense, but for his size, I mean, he's a seriously physical dude, like built like a middle linebacker, but there's some sneaky range to his arm side, and the arm's fine out there. He was a former pitcher and was up into the low 90s before he blew out and got TJ, but that's a guy I really like. Same with Murph Gray at Fresno. You mean, you talk about looking the part, and you know, when guys get off the bus, I mean, it's a big league body, and there's some really exciting tools there, especially offensively. He's not the nimblest or fleetest of foot over there at third, but the arm's plus, and he makes all the plays that he should, but you're kind of buying the offense there with him. And I don't think, you know, there'll kind of be that itch you're scratching about whether or not he ends up at first and is this right first baseman. But I didn't see that with him this summer. And I think that, you know, that's a last resort type deal. And then lastly, I guess with Conrad, like tools to the max, really impressive offense. Like, he looks like a small forward on like the Duke basketball team. Like, it's that kind of physicality and body type, blows you away. And then Brendan Summerhill, another outfielder who for me is a first round talent. He's just got to go out and do it at Arizona this year. And I think to your point, the one area that it's kind of right now, at least at this stage, the weakness of the class, and it's called, like you said, it's the college middle infielder. Like, it's Ivar Arquette for me and everyone else. And I know Vahevo Loy is, he'll play short again at Arkansas, but I'm way more convicted on Iva sticking at short than I am Vahevo, just from what I saw this summer. Like, Iva is a legit, like, guy. And if he goes out and has a first round type of year at Oregon State, kind of carries the momentum he built this summer. Like, he was far and away, in my mind, if I had a vote for the top pro prospect award, he was without a doubt the top pro prospect in the league. And I know they gave it to Ethan Petrie, but he was fantastic for Chatham. So, I mean, if he can go off, or if he can go and build off of what he did at Washington and with Chatham, like, I mean, especially if the lack of middle infield depth continues to be like a thing at the college level in this class, I mean, you're talking about a top half of the first rounder, potentially even top 10 type of guy. I'm that convicted on him.
Yeah. A couple things that came up to me as you were talking, it seems like in general, there is a lot of tools in this college outfield class, like maybe more tools and athleticism than you typically see in the college class. I feel like a lot of the best athletes and tools your players get drafted out of high school, and then the guys who don't at times often really struggle performance wise. And so there are a lot more hit questions with those super toolsy college guys, but really that doesn't seem like the case this year. I'll be curious to see at the end of the day how this college outfield class stacks up and just relative to other college outfield classes specifically, because I think between Laviolette, Cannarella, the entire trio of outfielders you mentioned in your group, including guys like Nolan Schubart, who have huge power, Ethan Petrie, who has huge power, there's just a lot of tools to like in this class. Some athletes who move really well and have a lot of physicality. There's just a lot of upside in this college outfield group, to my mind, maybe a little bit more than is typical of this demographic in the kind of top 50, top 60 range on the board. And then going into the shortstops, I'm really intrigued to just watch the two you mentioned a little bit more moving forward. And then you've got an interesting guy in Merrick Houston, who I feel like is kind of on the fringe of being a first rounder. We've got him right at 30. I've talked with scouts who view him as like a back of the first round type. Some guys who are a little bit more bearish on the upside and offensive profile and who would have him a little bit further down. But I think in terms of his defensive profile, his ability at the position, if he goes out and has a really strong offensive year, it wouldn't shock me if he was in this kind of like 20s range, maybe like a Kalen Culpepper sort of outcome in terms of like draft positioning. I am still a little bit skeptical in terms of like pure offensive upside. I want to see a little bit more from the bat with him, but there's no doubt he's a really impressive defensive shortstop. And if you're looking for the class, like on the college side, to find premier defenders in the infield, he would be one of the first guys that I mention. So there's kind of interesting notes on the college class. It is really a really fun group, but unless you have something to add to that, Peter, I want to pivot to the 1-1 debate, kind of how we're feeling about Jace Laviolette versus Ethan Holiday.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy, and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true from even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got 2 dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball.
Yeah, I think just to your point with Houston is I'd love to see some added impact, and I don't know if it's in there. Like, it's for sure a hit over power profile. The hit tool, like, you could realistically, at least this is what I had it as after the summer, you could stick a 55 on it. The contact ability is impressive, but it's a lot of singles and, you know, down the line doubles. There's not much of a driving the baseball part of his game, which I think is the only part holding you back, but it's the defensive ability at shortstop is really, really impressive. I thought it was plus this summer. He's comfortable attacking the baseball, throwing on the run from all angles, the arm strength plays, there's range, like, it's what it looks like over at short, and he's got a great body. So I'm with you on him. And then one other interesting wrinkle I've got, or not wrinkle, but I guess aspect, is that Virginia's Henry Ford, according to Coach O'Connor, I think this was maybe last week, pre-recording or right after we recorded, but he said that he'd be playing some outfield this spring, which, I mean, if teams are like, he's got arm strength. I'm just curious how it's going to look out there. But if teams are convicted on him sticking in an outfield spot, that's a guy who, you know, assuming the bat continues to play, how he does it at the plate is a little unique, and we'll get into that in future episodes. It looks interesting, but it works for him. But if the defense translates and teams think that he's got a shot to stick in the outfield, that's someone who could also skyrocket. So, I mean, there are plenty of storylines like that that we can dive into more as we go along, but I'm with you that the outfield crop is rather impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk about 1-1 then. I mean, this is probably what the people are most excited about at this stage. The 1-1 debate, if there is one, is always a fun conversation to have. Last year, just seeing Cleveland fans talk about Condon versus Bizana, and then some Weatherholt contingent, and there was even some Chase Burns contingents among the Cleveland fans. It's always just fun to debate the players at the top. And so this is kind of how I'm viewing the 1-1 case at this point. We obviously moved Jace Laviolette, Texas A&M's outfielder, into that spot. Ethan Holliday slides all the way down to number two. The feedback I was getting on the industry is that most people seem to view these two as kind of the top guys in the class. Whether or not they have Laviolette or Ethan Holliday number one kind of depends on who you talk to. I don't think there is a clear-cut consensus top player right now. The reason Laviolette moves up and Ethan Holliday moves down is, one, I think Ethan Holliday just kind of had a little bit of a disappointing summer. I wouldn't go so far as to say it was a bad summer, but I think he kind of fell into this. We see it happen all the time. The I'm not sure what we can call this, but kind of the target on your back summer, where you are always the most well-known player. You're the most famous guy. You're expected to be the best player in the class. The expectations for you from the scouting community watching is maybe higher than anyone else. From the opposing team, and particularly opposing pitchers, you're typically getting the best velocity, the best pitches. You're being pitched backwards. It's kind of that, like Bryce Terang had a down summer. Bobby Witt Jr. even didn't have like the greatest offensive summer his year. Dylan Cruz, same kind of deal. I don't think he was quite in that like very top of the high school class at that point in high school, but it happens. You see this a lot from the prominent high school players in the class. There were some more missed questions with Holliday that some scouts are more worried about than others. So I think there are just maybe a bit more chips in the armor than people were expecting for Ethan Holliday. And then also like the lowest people on Jace Laviolette were still higher than the lowest people on Ethan Holliday, if that makes sense. I think there's a lot of comfort in the fact that Jace is a potentially middle of the outfield college player who's done it for 2 years in the SEC. And so the fact that you don't have to project as much on Laviolette, and he has a similar tool set with probably a better athletic foundation, just I think creates a lot more comfort. I think this is still pretty wide open. Both these players have things they need to improve upon next spring. Contact with both of them is really a key. I think I would have to go back and look at this, but Jace Laviolette has had like a 24-25% strikeout rate in his college career in 2 years. That jumps out to me as extremely high for the first player off the board, and particularly the first college hitter in a draft class. I might actually have to go back and look and just see like top 10 college hitters, like what the strikeout rate is for that profile, because it just jumps out as a number you don't see too often. And that is very clearly the one area of his game he's going to need to just reinforce and improve upon next spring. But that's kind of the rationale here. Like with Laviolette, you've got a 6'5", 6'6", 220, 230 pound slugger with a ton of power who runs really well, probably a plus runner underway, might stick in center field, and has back-to-back 20 homer seasons as one of the best hitters in college baseball in the SEC. And with Ethan Holliday, you've got a really advanced hitter with a great eye, a lot of impact, a lot of physicality, big league bloodlines, who's probably going to stick on the infield in some capacity. A lot of questions about where that's eventually going to be. And so Laviolette 1, Ethan Holliday 2 right now. Would be curious, Peter, if you feel strongly about one or the other, if you view kind of the 1-1 debate as I've laid it out differently, or if you agree. And then for the listeners, if you guys feel really strongly about either of these profiles, which you would be more excited about for your teams drafting, definitely let us know that as well, because I think it's going to be a really fun conversation throughout the cycle.
As far as 1-1 goes, if we're just honing in on Laviolette versus Holliday, I think you probably know which way I lean, and I'm gonna like Laviolette, I think, for me is the guy. And I, heading into this cycle and as recently as this summer, I was a big Cam, still am a big Cam Cannarella fan, but when it comes to 1-1, I think it's, you know, you have the strikeout rate with Laviolette, but with Cannarella, I think if you're, again, if you're picking 1-1 and you're projecting a little bit on Cannarella's power, I think the lack of it might just be enough to scare you off of it. And with Cannarelli, I mean, you got plus hit, plus run, potentially plus defense, but it's likely below average power with Wood, which is a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to have to be really, really convicted on the hit tool. And if you are,
yeah. Are you saying that Cam Cannarella is your Travis Bazzana this year, Peter? Is that what you're getting at? Because I just laid out the Jace versus Ethan Holiday debate, and you're like, hold on now. Let's talk about Cam Cannarella.
No, that's like a calling your shot way of saying, like, I'm now in the camp of Jace LaViolette, and I think a lot of it is the points that you laid out. I mean, he's 6'5", 6'6", monster. It's double plus power. Yes, the strikeouts are a little high, but the approach and swing decisions are actually pretty advanced. There's just a lot of miss in the zone. And so, I mean, if he can clean that up, he's going to take what was an unbelievable year from a production standpoint, in which he hit 305 with 29 home runs and 78 RBIs. He could take that to another level, and it's effortless double plus raw power that he's got no issue getting to in games. The impact is next level. It's a really simple operation in the box. There's really, it's a minimal load and a small stride. I mean, he lets his God-given strength and present bat speed do most of the work. He does a great job of consistently getting the ball up in the air and creating loft in his swing. It's really, he doesn't force anything. And I think that the nice cherry on top to his profile is his defensive ability in center field, which I think goes overlooked just given the offensive prowess. He does move really, really well for his 6'5", 6'6" frame. It's at least an above average runner, like you said, when he's underway and just looking at him. Covers ground to either gap. And I think that the instincts defensively have improved with reps, which you see with guys a lot of the time. But I think when you're talking about Jace and how it's translated to center field, I think that's a really encouraging sign to see. And I think that it all points towards him at least getting a shot to stick in center field in professional baseball, and a shot that I think that he could take advantage of. And there's a way better chance than a 0% chance of him sticking there long term. So I think even given the lack of pure hit tool, and you kind of talk about the swing and miss a little bit, but for me, at least at this point, it'll be hard to knock Jace off that 1-1 stand. I'm curious to see how Cannarella looks from an impact standpoint. I know last year for Clemson, I think he hit, he hit 11 jacks, which is a career high by four. And it's going to be hard to really pound the table for an increase of in impact when you're swinging metal all spring, and just the, you know, again, metal bats. That's a, we could do 3-4 hour episodes on metal bats, but LaViolette's the 1-1 guy. And I think that as we go throughout the cycle, I might be the quote unquote low man on Holiday, just given that he'd be closer to like 5 than he would 1. Like, he's an outstanding player, but Cannarella's in that conversation for me. And then I'm really, really intrigued by both those college arms and Bremer and Arnold. So,
yeah, well, just a few points for me following up what you said. LaViolette's defense, I think it's a good call, like, to just highlight how good he actually is as a defender. I talked to one scout who just made the point that not only is he a great runner and athlete for his size, his actions in the outfield are really advanced, and just everything he does is super easy at the position. The way I would kind of frame it now is he seems like a better big-bodied defensive center fielder now than Chase DeLauder was at the same time to me. I mean, maybe some guys feel otherwise, but he at least looks more natural at the position despite being a little bit taller and maybe a little bit more physical. They might be around the same weight. But Chase DeLauder has continued to play center field and pro ball, and everything I've heard is he looks pretty good at the position still. So I wonder if he'll be that sort of big body defensive center fielder where he's perfectly capable of playing that position for you at the major league level, depending on who the other outfielders you have kind of ranging around him. If you've got a, Jacob Young has been it this year. If you've got a Jacob Young type defensive center fielder, Jace LaViolette is probably going to play left field or right field and play it very well. It's kind of the same way I think about Dylan Cruz too. He's playing a corner outfield position. I think if Jacob Young wasn't on that team and they needed a center fielder, I think he could play it pretty capably. So I would imagine whoever drafts Jace Laviolette, and again, depending on what happens with the spring, maybe he just completely falls apart as a defender. That could happen. I don't expect it to. I would assume whoever drafts him is going to take him and put him in center field and play him at that position as long as possible until some gold glover moves him off the position or you need to just put him in left or right to really optimize your lineup. So it's definitely a really key piece to his profile, the fact that I assume he'll be able to do it and do it pretty well. Just to steel man the Ethan Holliday case a little bit, because I do think he's a really talented player, and it wouldn't shock me if he wound up going 1-1 next spring. Is you could, if someone came up and said that they thought Ethan Holliday had the best offensive upside in this class, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, he's 18 years old. He's going to be 18 years old on draft day, I should say. He is much more advanced right now as a hitter and just physically than his brother Jackson Holliday was at the same time. I think we're viewing Jackson Holliday as like a second or third round type prospect at the current time in his draft cycle. If Ethan comes out next spring and is faster, a little bit more athletic, and just has a really strong offensive year like Jackson did, which I don't think there's any question that he's capable of doing that. It wouldn't shock me if people feel a little bit better about the athlete, about the defensive profile. If instead of looking at like maybe a third baseman, maybe a first baseman, maybe a corner outfielder, if he's flashing the leather at Stillwater and just is moving around a little bit better, and you can be pretty confident you're getting like a really capable, maybe above average defender at third base with this sort of offensive upside, I could easily see a top of the class case for him. He'll need to really play well, and I think speed and defensive actions are going to be two keys for him, in addition to just showing a lot of end zone contact next spring. Those are going to be the keys for him, but I think he's still in a position to go really good on the board. And then if Cannarella is kind of your other name to mention here, is kind of in the mix for this top spot, I'll throw out maybe Seth Hernandez as a dark horse for 1-1. I think it's unlikely. We've never seen a high school right-handed pitcher go 1-1 before. The last time a high school pitcher went in that spot, it was Brady Aiken in 2014. It does seem like high school pitching in general continues to track further and further down the board on average each draft class. It's just a risky profile, but I do think Seth Hernandez right now, I think you can make a pretty compelling case that he has the best upside of any pitcher in this draft class. Like, yes, Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold probably have more advanced overall pitching skills at this stage, the fact that they've done it in college, but I think that Seth Hernandez has a similar upside in terms of command and control. I think the stuff is more electric than both of these guys at the same age. I think you could probably project him to continue to add more electric stuff moving forward. His changeup is probably the best pitch of all of these three pitchers right now. So while I wouldn't say it's likely and I wouldn't bet on it, I have talked to some scouts who are like, hey, Seth Hernandez has to be in that conversation. And the fact that there's a high school right-handed pitcher who is even in that conversation, I think is cool. So he's maybe the dark horse candidate for me, but that's, I think, the names that we're talking about for the spot right now.
Yeah, and I'm with you on Holliday, and I think that the fact that he's got the Matt Holliday body type, I think Matt's like 6'4", 230-ish. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the fact that he's got the Matt body type and he's a left-handed hitter makes it really, really intriguing. I'm curious, like you said, if he's just a tick more explosive and goes out and has the gangbusters type of offensive season that Jackson did also at Stillwater High School in his draft year, because like you and like everyone, I really wouldn't blink if Ethan ends up going 1-1. I know that every single season still got to play out, but I'm with you there. And then I guess a dark horse for me, I guess a darker dark horse than Seth Hernandez would be Iva Arquette at 1-1.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm really, really bullish on him after the summer. 1-1's aggressive right now for sure.
But the Oregon State wave continues.
I know. I'd be surprised. Like, it's probably not going to end up happening, but I was really impressed this summer. And if you had to pick a dark horse, you know, there's lack of depth at the middle infield position, particularly shortstop collegiately. Big league body, the offensive profile is really impressive. There was an ease to drive the baseball with wood that really impressed me this summer. I think there was one swing in particular that stood out where he was facing Stanford's Joey Volchko, who, when looking way ahead to the 26 class, is for sure SP1 right now as it stands. Took an inner third fastball, inner half fastball. I think it was 97. Worked inside the baseball at the inside part of the baseball and drove it to right center field and hit a what was up basically like a line drive halfway up the wall. And I was like, whoa. And he really impressed me defensively throughout the summer. With each look, it got a lot better and improved at shortstop. The game clock especially took a step forward. The arm and the actions have always played, but just the instincts as a whole, kind of in a similar breath to Lavalette's instincts improving. Arquette's did the same at shortstop. Like, I'm really, really confident in saying, like, he is a pro shortstop. So that would be another 1-1 sleeper.
Yep.
It's hard to look past other premium position guys, I guess, like Caden Bodine and Ike Irish, but each have their warts that I think will keep them off 1-1. Like, the lack of impact with Bodine, for as advanced a hitter as he is, like, the hit tools plus for me, the defense is really, really solid, but I'm not going to be able to overlook the lack of impact that he's probably going to have with Wood. I don't think it's going to be enough to warrant a 1-1. Ike Irish, I think, from an impact standpoint, is more advanced than Bodine, but the defense is also a question mark. Like, he might end up at first. Not great. Like, you're buying the offense, and you always have bought the offense with Ike Irish. It's just like, where is he at defensively? And I kind of had a feeling Seth Hernandez would be your guy, so I'm curious. I'm extra fired up to watch him. And that Corona team this spring is going to be just obscene with him, Billy Carlson, and Brady Ebel. Like, that's a stupid group to have. Like, it's like the meme on like TikTok and Twitter. It's like you have like a math test kicks your butt, and then at 4:30 you gotta go play Seth Hernandez, Billy Carlson, and Brady Ebel. Like, that sounds like a really tough Thursday for 17-year-old Peter.
It definitely does. To be clear, I don't think I would take him right now over some of these bats we have in front, but if like if a lot of the hitters in this kind of tier struggle next year, and we have real maybe hit tool questions, and Tyler Bremner and Jamie Arnold don't take a step forward, and Seth Hernandez has like a Jackson Jobe-esque spring, I don't think it would be entirely out of the question for me. Looking at Jackson Jobe right now, he's panned out pretty well. It would be a very risky pick, and a pick that you have to have a lot of patience for it to pan out. So I still would bet against it. It would depend. You'd have to have a certain team picking one to make that happen at all, I think. So we don't even know who's picking one now. So there are just so many things that would have to line up for that to happen. But yeah, today, like, if you made me say, who's your first pitcher off the board, I think Seth Hernandez, like, more times than not, would probably be the guy for me right now. Even though I've got Bremner, Arnold, and Hernandez in that order on our board currently, I think the industry would probably lean towards the perceived safety of the college arms more than I would. But yeah, no, it'll be fascinating. The fact that we've talked about so many players for this 1-1 discussion, I think is fun for the class, and we'll see if maybe one of these guys solidifies his case as we move forward. And on draft day, we're talking about how it's a no-brainer pick and there's not going to be much drama. But, you know, Peter, that really doesn't feel like it happens too often.
I was going to say, even this summer, there was a ton of drama involved, and it was...
Oh, yeah. I mean, someone else. We haven't had it since... I don't think since 2019 has there been a draft where I'm like, I guess maybe Spencer Torkelson. But even then, like, it was Adley Rutschman, and then, funny enough, Casey Mize the year before. Those two were like, these are pretty clearly the guys going one. And since then, it's just been a little bit of chaos.
And a lot can happen, but even just like you said, and talking the sheer amount of names that we've talked through today, it's going to, again, there's not going to be, I don't think, a clear cut. Like, there will be names at the top that have separated themselves from everyone else, but there will be a serious, I think, 1-1 debate, you know, even up until perhaps the pick is made. So you could even throw in Cruz Schoolcraft, and I mean, just 6-8 lefty stuff continues to improve. That profile, I think, is really hard to look past. I'm kind of with you that a prep arm is going to be a tough-ish sell at one, or a tougher sell. But again, it's hard to not mention him just based on the sheer uniqueness of his profile. Like, that's someone I'm really excited to watch progress on the mound, because I think that there's some low hanging fruit you can kind of tighten up, and then the stuff seems to only improve. And I think, you know, he's a pitcher all the way. I know he'll do both this year for his high school, but he's no doubt a pitcher. But yeah, it's so much fun to talk through it at one. Like, I think we mentioned alone 8+ names. So it should be a really fun cycle to watch play out.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, that's all I had for today, Peter. If there's anything you want to plug or mention before we get out of here, please feel free to do it.
Yeah, I think in the next week and a half up on the site will be the top 25 recruiting class rankings. I kind of sunk my teeth into it a little bit in the last couple of days, so excited to dive in further. And then it'll sort of take on a similar look to what the transfer coverage had. So it would be the top 25 classes, and then a few classes that just missed, and then a few classes that I think are a little underrated. So that'll be fun to get out there. And then the top 10 newcomers will be in the October magazine, so make sure to order that. And then also it'll be up on the website in due time, probably in the next few weeks or so. And then it's handbook season, so pre-order the handbook. I was cleaning out my room the other day and I found an old prospect handbook, and I remember the joy I had as like a 15-year-old getting it on Christmas. So have the similar.
Now you got joy. Your byline in it.
Yeah, I know that joy is literally priceless. But yeah, I mean, it's a great buy. It's well worth it. The coverage in there is just incredible. So a lot of fun stuff on the horizon as always.
Yeah. Well, you said it pretty well, Peter. I don't have too much to add. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. Thank you for supporting Baseball America, all of our podcasts, the website and the magazine and the handbook. Definitely give it a shot if you have not before. I think you'll be pretty happy with the depth of coverage, like Peter was mentioning. But for Peter, I'm Carlos. We will see you next time, everybody. So long.